And it is time for Central Coast Voices. Today, our host is Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and the show today is being conducted over Zoom. And Mario, are you with us? Mario, can you hear me?
Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. For today's show, we'll be talking about a range of healthcare initiatives with guests from the Access Support Network. Their work centers on human immunodeficiency virus, commonly known as HIV, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, typically referred to as AIDS, and hepatitis C, also known as HCV. Access Support Network takes a community-centered approach to addressing individuals' health needs in the context of their social and economic realities. This has led to some creative strategies for increasing access to healthcare and elevating conversations that break through stigma in our communities. Our guests today for today's show are leaders from the Access Support Network: David Kilburn, Executive Director; Carla Quiroga, Program Manager for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties; and Elena Salias, Program Development Manager. Welcome, David, Carla, and Elena.
Thank you, Mario, for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. We're so happy that you're here. I wanted to start with getting just a little bit of background for our listeners about what Access Support Network is. So, if David, if you don't mind starting us off and sharing about the history of the organization and how its mission and scope have evolved over time.
Yeah, again, thank you, Mario, for having us on. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about our programs. Access Support Network, formerly the AIDS Support Network of San Luis Obispo County, was formed in 1984 in response to one of the first cases of HIV in our community. The medical community was vastly unprepared for dealing with HIV and AIDS. So this person presented to the old general hospital and was given an oxygen tank and was directed to drive to San Francisco. A group of this gentleman's friends were so outraged at the response that they formed just a community group called the AIDS Support Group. And just sort of responded in any way they could to help connect people to appropriate care. And fast forward a bit, Ryan White funding came down. Ryan White was a young boy that contracted HIV through a blood transfusion. And his mother, Jeannie White, was instrumental in lobbying for federal funding to come down to address HIV and the stigma that was associated with it and to develop care and treatment. So funding came down to San Luis Obispo, and the HIV Care Consortium was formed to administer those funds for HIV or the HIV care. Then we fast forward a bit into the late 1990s, 1999 in particular, we saw a need in the community for addressing hepatitis C in our community. So we formed the San Luis Obispo Hepatitis C Project. Then we'll fast forward a bit more. In 2015, we were contacted by the Monterey County Public Health Department asking if we could expand our services into Monterey County, since the service organization up here was closing abruptly. So we now are expanding a bit more into serving northern Santa Barbara County with our HIV, hepatitis C, and different prevention programs. So that's sort of in a nutshell how ASN has formed. One thing that we kind of pride ourselves on is we work in the community to help people get access to healthcare, but we often find barriers, systemic barriers that need to be addressed. And ASN has been known to step into those challenges and find solutions. So we'll go through the program today talking about some of those solutions and ideas that we are forming to help help more people gain access to culturally and economically appropriate programs and linkage to care. So that's it, Mario. That's ASN in a nutshell.
Thanks, David, for giving us that overview and introduction to ASN. Carla and Elena, you know, you both are involved in programming and services. So I wanted to ask each of you, you know, what programs and services does ASN provide to the various locations they're situated in?
Yeah, I think I'll highlight what we are offering SLO County as well as Santa Barbara County, and then Elena could speak to Monterey County. But, you know, as I just heard David review our services, we do a lot. And so I hope that the listeners will really hear us highlight the diversity of our programs and really recall on us when they need us as well. But right now, as David mentioned, we are offering HIV as well as Hep C support services in SLO County. And in addition, we offer testing as well as linkage to care. We are doing rapid tests for HIV and Hep C. And when somebody receives a positive diagnosis, we are getting them connected to care. And for the folks who are Hep C reactive, we are getting them connected with our Hep C telehealth services so that they can cure themselves of the Hep C virus. We are also offering what is PrEP, which is a daily medication that somebody can take to prevent an HIV infection. And we also are a site where folks can come and access naloxone if they need it. And then was it 2020 that we started offering our testing and linkage to care in Santa Barbara County? So currently we are partnering with community-based organizations in Santa Barbara doing on-site mobile testing and linking folks to care there.
Thank you. Elena?
Yeah, so as David mentioned earlier, in 2015, we expanded services into Monterey County, our neighbors up to the north. And we provide similar services that Carla described for folks living with or at risk for HIV. And are also doing Hep C testing and linkage to care there. Something that is unique about our service delivery in Monterey County is that we have a whole team of folks that provide harm reduction services in Monterey County. So that includes things like syringe exchange program, overdose prevention and education. We are also providing mobile low barrier Suboxone access for treatment of opioid misuse disorder, really trying to go to folks physically, literally where they are, because we know that social determinants of health are directly related to people's healthcare outcomes. So we are doing that out in community in partnership with some local doctors and incredible staff that are out serving the people. So.
Awesome. Yeah, that is exactly what I had to imagine. You know, reducing harm in the community does not just relate to like the physical environment and things like that, but like actually showing up for people, like the teams in both in Monterey, in Santa Barbara, and in SLO County. I also think that for our listeners, there may be some misconceptions that they might have around both HIV and Hep C. But I wanted to know, like, from your perspective, like, what are the most common misconceptions around HIV and Hep C in our communities?
I'll jump in for a second. This is David. I think for HIV, people don't think it's in our community or they're not at risk. Everyone needs to be tested for Heps or HIV in their lifetime. We are seeing an uptick in cases of HIV in our younger communities, our younger population, from say 16 to 24. It's a group of individuals that did not experience the early days of HIV and the media attention that was spent on HIV. So a lot of our work is in educating people who may be at risk and who may be candidates for PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis that Carla was talking about. I think it's really important for people that are potentially at risk to be able to protect themselves and avoid infection with HIV. For Hep C, people just don't have any knowledge. Most people don't have much knowledge about hepatitis C and the prevalence. It is estimated to be at least 4 to 5 times more prevalent than HIV. And hepatitis C now is curable. So it's really important that people get tested and find out if they have naturally cleared the virus on their own. About a quarter of the people infected will naturally clear the virus. The other portion of those people that don't clear the virus, we will do additional tests to find out if they are living with the virus and if they are appropriate for treatment. So I think it's really important to, one, know your status for either disease and take proactive efforts to either avoid contracting or get linked to care for treatment.
Yeah. And I think some of the misinformation around the accessibility of Hep C treatment as well. You know, now insurance covers it. The treatment is very short and it has a really high cure rate or effective rate. And I think that in the past, or I think that people are basing whether they want to get tested or pursue treatment based on some of that misinformation. So being able to bring them up to speed with, you know, what it truly looks like. I think there's also a misconception that somebody has to stop their use in order to access treatment. And, you know, we are here to support them and we can help them access treatment if that is their goal.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Carla. You know, I'm going to get the year wrong. I want to say it was 2016. ASN participated in a demonstration project in partnership with the California Department of Public Health. And through that project, we specifically targeted treating people who had ever used drugs to Hep C care. And what that program ultimately clarified was that people who use drugs are no more likely to fail treatment than somebody who doesn't. And so we really try to advocate for our clients that are in active use and help them to know that they can get treatment too and be successful at it. And, you know, whether they have insurance, to Carla's point, they have Medi-Cal or no insurance at all, our team works really hard to connect people to care, and there are treatment options available regardless of somebody's ability to pay.
Yeah, and you'll hear us discussing a lot of working with people who use drugs and who inject. That's, you know, a target population that we focus on because they're traditionally underserved and not connected to traditional healthcare. So that's where we step in. But HIV and Hep C can be spread, obviously, to with activities other than drug use. So it's important to not think that it's, you know, only those people that are at risk. It's all of us that are at risk. That's why I say that everybody really needs to be tested at least once in their life, or if they have potential risk activities that could put them at risk, to be tested annually. So,
yeah, those misconceptions that you all shared are really helpful in, you know, bucking the stigma, making sure that folks have the education and access to, you know, the knowledge that they need to, especially if it's affecting folks in the ranges from ages 16 to 24, with HIV, and then with the prevalence being 4 to 5 times more than that, I just am so grateful that we have an organization that provides these resources and education to our community members.
Yeah, and our testing is free, and it's a rapid test. We have results in 20 minutes for the antibodies. We'll probably go into explaining how those tests work in a bit, but we actually just received some tests that are 1 minute tests for HIV antibodies, which is really exciting. It's a new technology that we're exciting to be able to be utilizing potentially in the future. We'll also hopefully talk about what we've learned through the pandemic of COVID and how we've responded in ways of getting people linked to care and sort of circumventing traditional phlebotomy activities and things like that. So we can table that for a bit later, but I do want to discuss that if we can.
For sure. Those are exciting developments. I'm Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The voices with mine today are leaders from the Access Support Network, David Kilburn, Executive Director, Carla Quiroga, Program Manager for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties, and Elena Salias, Program Development Manager. We're talking about Access Support Network's work in the community supporting communities impacted by HIV and Hep C and supporting efforts for education, prevention, and health access. We invite and welcome you to bring your questions or comments about today's topic to our guests. And to do that, you can call 805-549-8855 or you can email them to voices@kcbx.org. I wanted to kind of follow up on what you had talked about with like mobile testing unit. And so I did see a mobile testing unit from Access Support Network at last week's Pride festivities at Laguna Lake. So I wanted to kind of ask, you know, how does ASN manage these mobile operations and programs across the three counties?
Yeah, so I think that mobile outreach testing vans have been a dream of ours for several years. And so it was really exciting to see those come to fruition. Right now we have two mobile units, one that's based predominantly out of Monterey County and the other that serves San Luis and Santa Barbara County. In Monterey County, that unit is used to provide mobile syringe exchange services, testing and linkage to care, and our street medicine team offers wound care and some very basic primary care services by our volunteer physicians. They also go out and do community outreach and provide, just relationship building. You know, it's like all these services that we offer are wonderful, but it really truly starts with our caring and compassionate staff building relationships with people who often feel so disconnected and left out, if you will.
Yeah, we had talked about getting these mobile outreach vans for many years. And what we were doing in the past is renting a budget rent-a-car, a U-Haul or something van, and throwing in some tables with bungee cords. And we were just doing whatever we could to get our services into the streets and reaching people where they're at. So we now have been able to purchase some vans, and they are not retrofitted yet, but they'll be going in for retrofitting in the next month or so. So we're really excited about having full-on clinic vans. We had to do it sort of slowly to piecemeal funding together to do this. We work off of donations and fundraisers and what grants we can find, but they are coming together and it's very exciting. When we got our medical malpractice insurance was a major milestone, so we can cover any doctors that would like to volunteer with us in our street medicine outreach. They would just need to contact our agency and see what availability we have, but we do work primarily with volunteers, medical providers. And I think as we expand our programs, there will be opportunities for our community to get involved in helping us with our service delivery. So
it's been really exciting to see our outreach and our services outside of our office really evolve over time. You know, when we started the testing program in, I think it was 2016, just before we started the demonstration grant, I had really kind of tunnel vision thinking like the testing was only going to be in our office and in a very traditional way. And the next thing you know, we're out, you know, in the street at agencies in a van on the creek. And it was really exciting to see that it can go outside of our clinic and really go to where the people need it. There's so many barriers for many of our participants to access healthcare. And so to be able to bring as much as we have and asking them, like, what else can we help you connect with has really been really motivating. And then not only that, but I think that once we started our efforts of renting, you know, the cargo vans to do the mobile testing, I think there was no going back. It was like, you know, we can't only just do this out of our office. There has to be a way. And so I think that really was the writing on the wall to really get these mobile vans and making them kind of come to life. And we're looking forward to working with a local company who's helping us to retrofit. And in fact, our team from Salinas drove their van up here to really showcase all it is that we are doing out of our van the way it is now. And it's really impressive to seeing what they, you know, the services that they're offering.
Totally. They had a whole spread of educational materials and smiling faces and just very approachable. I mean, I remember back in 2016, you know, having our first mobile like event at the Pride then, how we coordinated with like different people. And so just like, I think having that hub and at a local event where a lot of people are coming in is definitely something fortunate that we have here. But you also mentioned, David, you know, that the pandemic has presented some new opportunities to provide care in a more accessible fashion through work like telehealth. Could you highlight a little bit of what that is for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So during the early days of COVID and the fear that was everywhere, we shut down our offices and started working primarily remotely in San Luis Obispo in particular. But we were able to start our telemedicine for Hep C. We have an incredible doctor from San Diego that has been working with us through these last couple of years. And we were successfully able to get many people through treatment and cured via telemedicine, which was great. The doctor had previously been coming up to San Luis to do an in-person clinic. And when that was not possible, it's like, well, what do we do? Let's implement telemedicine. And it worked incredibly. In fact, people really preferred to be able to stay home and connect with the doctor from there. We now have a pretty incredible tool. When somebody tests positive for the initial Hep C antibody test, which is the rapid test, we would have to previously send someone to a lab for a phlebotomy draw, or we would have our on-site phlebotomist do that draw. Now there's technology, and we found this out during the pandemic, that there is what's called a dried blood spot test. And what it is, it can be self-administered, but you stick your finger, prick your finger with a little lancet, and then you drop the blood onto this dry cardboard blotter paper. And there's several circles you fill, and that can be sent off to a lab and interpreted, and will come back with what's called the PCR or RNA for Hep C. And that actually shows if somebody has the virus in their system and needs treatment. So that's really been a game changer to avoid the phlebotomy draw for that that step of the what we call the care cascade. And that's getting somebody tested, getting somebody linked to care, on treatment, and ultimately cured. So there still will ultimately need to be a real lab draw from a phlebotomist before treatment started. But just that one step to avoid that one of those lab draws is pretty cool. There's also been, we partnered with a company called Mister, MISTR.com, or Sister, SISTR.com. And what that is provides in-home testing for PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV prevention. And what somebody does is signs up for this. The test kits are sent to them to be self-administered at their home. They're sent back, and then a doctor via telemedicine will meet with that person and look at their labs and, if appropriate, prescribe PrEP, which will be delivered to them at their home via a mail order pharmacy. So what's great about that program is it gets people super low barrier access to PrEP, as well as screens for STIs in the process, which is a requirement for getting on PrEP. So we've identified quite a bit of STIs in the community through that program. And I think, you know, we all know that public health really had to redirect many of their efforts to address COVID, and STI testing in our community was somewhat limited due to that shift to address COVID. So it's a good opportunity for people, if they're interested in PrEP, to be able to do it all at home. So,
yeah, I think something I would add to that too is just that, you know, Mister gives people a real level of comfort and confidentiality. And we also have a case manager who's assigned to provide as much or as little support through the process as the client or participant wants. So somebody could do it completely on their own through a portal that's really easily accessible, or perhaps they want some assistance. They're navigating an insurance issue, or as David mentioned, maybe they've had a positive test for an STI and need connection to care. So it's really a great way to access those services.
And I will add that this Mister is completely free to the client. No cost whatsoever. It is not billed through insurance. So it is absolutely confidential for the participant. So
that's Mister, MISTR, and Sister, SISTR?
.com, correct.
Cool. Also, you know, there's PrEP, right? Pre-exposure prophylaxis, and then PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis. So I'm wondering if you could describe what, if there's a difference, or, you know.
There is. Pre-exposure prophylaxis is to avoid contracting HIV if you're exposed. PEP, or post-exposure prophylaxis, is if you knowingly are exposed to HIV through sex or whatever method, you have about 72 hours to get connected to, let's say, a doctor to prescribe medications that will avoid actually acquiring HIV. So one is before, one is after. But PEP, the post-exposure, it's extremely important that you act quickly. So if somebody is intimate and having unprotected sex with somebody that is HIV positive, that is not virally suppressed, then PEP may be appropriate. And I do want to, one misconception also that maybe is important to talk about now is if somebody is HIV positive, and they are on appropriate medications, and they are virally suppressed, meaning that the HIV virus cannot be detected in their bloodstream. That's called undetectable. And the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, have come up with a slogan that says U equals U, and that means undetectable is untransmissible, meaning that if somebody has an undetectable viral load for HIV, they will not transmit the virus. So I think that was pretty bold for CDC to come out with that statement, but it really does remove the stigma for people that are HIV positive that want to maintain a normal and probably, you know, sex life or intimacy issues with their partner. So I think it's just we're making bold steps in HIV care and treatment. So we have really excellent treatments for HIV where somebody can live a long and normal life. That is shocking when somebody receives a diagnosis of HIV. Initially, one of our main things that we try to instill on that person that's receiving that information is that HIV is treatable. And somebody can live a long and normal lifespan with HIV if they are connected to care. And that's the main thing that we really need to point out is that's what ASN does. And that it maintains linkage to care and continuity of care. Because things happen in people's lives and they may fall out of care or lose important benefits, access, and lose access to their medications. So that's where we step in and start problem solving with the clients.
That's good.
Because,
to know.
Yeah, we all know that our healthcare system is difficult to maneuver, and we are that advocate for people, either initial, connection or just maintaining connection through their care.
Yes. We're going to take a short break to hear from our team and a little bit of music. Back over to you, Hank.
Thank you, Mario. You're listening to Central Coast Voices here on listener-supported public radio KCBX. An unwanted car that's given you years of good service can do one final good deed. Donate it to KCBX to help pay for your favorite KCBX programs. To learn more, go to kcbx.org under the Support KCBX tab or call us at 800-549-8855.
The Road Home is a weekly radio show of music rooted in American tradition. And that's a tradition built on musical influences from all over the world. I'm Marisa Waddell. Tune in every Thursday night for The Road Home, Americana music, its roots, and its branches, with plenty of new releases and lots of favorites, too. That's Thursday nights from 6:30 to 8, right after All Things Considered, for any time on demand at kcbx.org.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices on listener-supported public radio. I'm Hank Hadley. Your host today on Central Coast Voices is Mario Espinosa-Kulik. Welcome back, Mario. Take it away.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. The voices with mine today are leaders from the Access Support Network, David Kilburn, Executive Director, Carla Quiroga, Program Manager for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties, and Elena Salias, Program Development Manager. I'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question for today's guests or a comment for our discussion, we would love to hear from you. Call 805-549-8855, or you can email questions and comments to voices@kcbx.org, and we will get them on the air. You can also keep up with the Access Support Network on social media to learn about their programs, resources, services, and events. On Instagram, they are at ASNSLOMC, And on Facebook, you can find them by searching for Access Support Network. They also have information on their website at www.asn.org. To catch folks up who probably just started tuning in, we've been talking about how HIV and Hep C affect communities on the Central Coast. I'd like to continue our conversation by focusing on your work around overdose prevention and harm reduction. But first, I think we could benefit from sort of like a snapshot of what HCV infections look like in our communities and what if the treatment is available and what that looks like.
Yeah, boy, once again, it just as in the progress of treatment and development of medications for HIV, it's even more striking for hepatitis C. Currently, treatments can be as short as 8 weeks long and all oral medications with minimal, if any, side effects at all. And I point that out because previous treatments for Hep C or HCV were very difficult and nearly debilitating for people. They involved interferon injections that could really make somebody feel horribly ill for up to a year. So I think it's important that if you have that previous knowledge of what treatments were in the past, they're nothing like that now. Insurance, Medi-Cal covers Hep C treatment. And it used to be that you had to have a certain staging of your liver fibrosis, basically, or the disease progression of your liver through Hep C had to be at a certain point to start treatment. We are involved with multiple advocacy groups in the state, and we advocated for many years to try to get that restriction removed, and it is removed now. So anybody with Hep C can be treated. So it's important. Hep C progresses very slowly, but it does significant damage to your liver. So it's important to get tested, to know your status on your Hep C and HIV, and let us help you get linked to care if you need treatment.
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that advocacy component, as I think that's actually pretty important in addressing these disparities that are in our community. I'm thinking, in this current term or like recently, are there any local and state policies that are supporting harm reduction efforts that ASN's lobbying behind or helping to advocate for?
There are. We were successful, not particularly ASN, but the advocacy groups were successful in getting funding secured for a multiple year program to fund what's called the California Harm Reduction Initiative, or CHIRI. And that provides funding to local communities to provide syringe service programs, which reduce harm in the community and allow people to access clean syringes and new syringes. It can be pretty devastating to see when syringes are used over and over. They literally get barbed on the end and can really do significant damages to veins. So these programs are increasing in numbers throughout the state, some coming on board weekly now in different communities. So that was about $15 million that was allocated to be over 5 years. And we are now advocating for that program to be extended in time and also expanded. So that's one level of advocacy that we're doing in harm reduction. We are advocating for condoms to be available in schools. We are trying to increase syphilis and congenital syphilis outbreak strategies. And we've seen significant upticks in syphilis throughout the state. So that's a concern. And we're also looking to increase funding on the state level to increase hepatitis C prevention and linkage to care. So all of those are harm reduction strategies that the state has been quite responsive to in the past. So,
and in the realm of maybe like overdose prevention, like I remember hearing about overdose prevention centers. Are those still currently being talked about in legislative advocacy?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have seen stories published that fentanyl overdose is the number one cause of death for people in this country between the ages of 18 and 45. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of opinions in both directions about, you know, syringe access and, to your point, safe consumption sites. But, you know, the only disease in this country that people get thrown in jail for is addiction. We are trying to, you know, solve the challenges of drug use and addiction by putting people in jail. And what they really truly need is access to healthcare, to be treated with dignity and love. And to your point, a place where they can consume substances safely. There is efforts in other states like New York and obviously other countries where safe consumption sites are up and running. And there have been efforts in the state of California to approve those, although they have not passed. I know that there are some limited programs trying to launch in San Francisco. But the essential idea behind this is that it's saving people's lives. You know, people can get into their thoughts and feelings about drug use, but the truth is that people are dying at an alarming rate in this country from overdose. And these centers act as a way to build relationships for people to consume whatever substance they are with the support of caring, compassionate staff and medical people who can respond to an overdose should it occur.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I was just going to say another grant that we are actually delivering right now in Monterey County, the city of Monterey in particular, is we received a grant to develop a community response team or a substance use response team that we will hire staff to work with the police department to respond to an overdose in tandem with the police and the first responders with our team, which is a harm reduction model that we're not in uniforms. We're not, you know, we're peers necessarily, and maybe a paraprofessional that will respond to work with the family and the person in getting them into care. So the person that overdoses, their overdose may be reversed with Narcan or Naloxone. But that person right then and there may be ready to be induced into Suboxone, which is a program, which is a drug that can be used to get off of opioids. So it's a new program that we're developing, and it's exciting because we're talking to many parents of teenagers that are, or even, you know, elementary kids that are experimenting a little bit, dabbling with a pill or something with their peers, but that are overdosing. You know, in the old days, and fentanyl is everywhere right now. So we provide naloxone to the community members, along with, like in San Luis Obispo, Slow Bangers, the syringe exchange program there offers Narcan. It's available. And I think everybody, if you have children, if you have just all parents should have naloxone on hand just in case your child or a friend of yours, anybody overdoses. It can be easily administered nasally or injectable to reduce or to
reverse,
turn around an overdose. So yeah, it's just one more thing to have in your tool belt.
That's really helpful to know. There's
a website, naloxonenow, slow.org, where anyone in Slow County can go and find out not only ways to access naloxone, but there's also training videos and kind of signs to look for of an overdose. And I think it, you know, as David said, not just for parents, but I think it's the responsibility of community members to look out for one another, especially with opioid use and misuse so prevalent. You know, it's hard to imagine that this wouldn't impact people's lives, knowing what we know about the rates of overdoses.
That's really helpful information. Naloxoneslow.org?
It's naloxonenowslow.org.
Naloxoneslownowslow.org. And is this what folks would consider medication for opioid use disorder? Or is that different?
No, it's actually naloxone and Narcan as a prescription medication that is used to reverse an opioid overdose. As they indicated, it's super easy to administer and really effective when given in a timely manner. It is free at ASN, and as David mentioned, the good people over at Slow Bangers also offer Narcan for free. Medication for opioid misuse disorder, there's a lot of them, but the one that we offer in our programs is Suboxone. And, you know, there are a lot of different treatment options out there for people. Our program is really centered around being low barrier and not requiring people to participate in, you know, kind of organized recovery services like group therapy or things like that. So not one approach for everybody works. And so if folks are interested in that service, they can contact our staff in our Salinas office or Carla's folks in the San Luis office. We haven't quite launched that program just yet in San Luis, but our goal is to do that very soon.
Yeah, in just a few months of offering this service, the low barrier Suboxone or MOUD, we've had, I'm thinking, 150 people induced onto Suboxone in an effort to try to free themselves of their opioid addiction. So there is a big need out there in the community. And as Elena was saying, not one approach works for everybody. So we're trying to provide additional resources that aren't available in the community.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks for clarifying on the MOUD, medication for opioid use disorder, and also on the overdose prevention medications like naloxone and Narcan. I wanted to also just repeat before we get on our next break here, that if you are looking for ways to prevent overdoses yourselves, go to the website naloxonenowslow.org. And if you are familiar or are looking for another location that helps with this, Slow Bangers is another org that has been helpful in this area. I'm Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's show and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show and many others to choose from. The voices with mine today are leaders from the Access Support Network, David Kilburn, Executive Director, Carla Quiroga, Program Manager for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties, and Elena Salias, Program Development Manager. We've been talking about the range of programs and services that Access Support Network offers and to reduce harm on the Central Coast. We still have some time for your email questions or comments at voices@kcbx.org. And for this next section, I'd like to focus on those, you know, how folks can take action in the community for their own health and our own and our community's well-being by covering a little bit about HIV. We've talked about Hep C and knowing your status for both HIV and Hep C, but can you talk a little bit about you know, what the prevalence and risk are for folks here on the Central Coast? We heard 16 to 24, but in what ways can community members help to prevent and minimize risk for HIV?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is getting tested and knowing your own status. And, you know, I think in terms of HIV prevention, we've talked about PrEP, which is a great way to prevent HIV transmission. Also for folks who are positive, being on treatment, as David kind of talked about earlier, and maintaining a viral suppression. And, you know, I think that stigma, all of the things that we've talked about today, I think stigma plays a large role in why we continue to see people not being connected to care for these things. So I think doing your part to educate yourself about HIV and Hep C or drug overdose prevention and education so that you can not be someone that kind of continues that stigma in the community.
Oh, you're muted, David.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to point out a couple of things. If you are HIV positive in our communities, please, and you are not connected to our agency, I would suggest just making a phone call and seeing if there's any programs that could benefit you. There are programs that can help pay the insurance premiums for people that are HIV positive, whether that be through your employer or a private plan. We talked about PrEP and it being a once-a-day pill. There are actually a new medication that is an injectable once a month or once every 2 months, and that can be used for both HIV prevention and HIV care. And we talk about all of our different prevention methods and PrEP and PEP and all that, but there's also TAP, which is treatment as prevention. And we talked about if somebody is on virally suppressed and undetectable viral load that they are untransmissible. So, you know, I would say what you can do in out in the community to get involved, get yourself tested, get yourself linked to care, and get yourself on PrEP if you are potentially at risk. And if you're Hep C, get yourself tested and get yourself cured.
In terms of our local health professionals, I know that you already partner with a few in the areas you're present at, but are there any opportunities for local healthcare professionals to get involved with Access Support Network?
There is. We were talking about our outreach and mobile outreach efforts for testing and linkage to care. I think as we develop our street medicine model programming, there could be opportunities for doctors, nurses, mid-levels to volunteer some time as we develop our programs. We're excited to see our programs grow. And, you know, we definitely are not trying to duplicate anybody else's services. That would be a waste of resources. But we are looking to find gaps in services and populations that are being underserved in our communities and bring our services to them. Because a lot of people that we're serving are not connected to our traditional healthcare settings for a multitude of reasons. So if we can get them linked to care and hopefully connected to a larger healthcare setting model, that would be our goal. But it's reaching those people that are currently not being reached is our primary focus. But yeah, there's great resources in our community. There's community health centers, there's Planned Parenthood, there's Capslo, the center, Cal Poly Health. We partner with a multitude of organizations to develop a seamless integration of care and access for people in our community.
And I know that David, was just talking specifically about healthcare professionals, but one thing that has really been kind of the backbone of our agency is really kind of recruitment of volunteers and the role that they play in our agency. Not only do they help us to really be able to deliver these vital services, but also to be advocates of our agency and to help spread the word around, awareness and really just making our agency name be out there and be known. And you know, one of the unfortunate things about COVID is that it's been really difficult to maintain our volunteer base with the office closures and reopenings. And so I would say that if you are at a time where you are available, check in with us and see how you can get involved. There's programs that, you know, are really exciting to be a part of right now out in the community. And if you're somebody who is kind of more inclined to administrative stuff, you like filing, we've got that too. There's really different ways to get involved. But we really miss, you know, that really strong volunteer base that we have really cultivated over the years. And, you know, what we do have coming up is a special event, which is the AIDS Life Cycle. It's not our fundraiser, but as part of this statewide fundraiser, we do one day of it. So the AIDS Life Cycle, for those who are not familiar, is a bike ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles. Folks are riding that distance during the week, so it'll be happening next week. And on Wednesday, June 8th, they are stopping at Cuesta College, and we will be serving lunches as a fundraiser for our agency, and we need lots of volunteers. It's a really fun event. This is back live, so we're really looking forward to being back out there. Call our office at 805-781-3660 to sign up and get involved.
What's really cool about this fundraiser, too, is one, it's really exciting to see the riders come through, and it's a major commitment to ride 500-plus miles. But they're really fun to interact with and cheer on. But the AIDS Life Cycle itself provides meals along the way for the riders. So what happens for this day at Cuesta is the riders will choose to purchase a lunch through us, knowing it's a fundraiser and it's not that sandwich they've been getting every day along the way, but it's a special lunch, and they know it's a fundraiser for us. And in turn, then the lunches that they forfeit are in turn donated to our local SLOW food bank. So it's a win-win in our community. So those sandwiches and food items will go out to community members in need as well. So, come down and volunteer. Call us first to see how we can get you involved. But as Carla was saying, there are things that we have available if you really like filing or data entry or meal preparation or maybe taking somebody to a doctor's appointment. Call us. There's opportunities. And we need you in Monterey County, San Luis County, and Northern Santa Barbara County.
Wonderful. And, you know, I will add that, you know, I actually am on the board of this organization here with us today, Access Support Network. So if you do have any questions about board service or would like to get involved, please do also feel free to contact us we can fill you in. I'd like to express my deep gratitude to our guest for today from Access Support Network, David Kilburn, Executive Director, Carla Quiroga, Program Manager for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties, and Elena Salias, Program Development Manager. We've been talking about how HIV and Hep C affects communities on the Central Coast and the range of services and resources that Access Support Network offers and how individuals and community leaders can help. You can keep up with them on social media to see what they're up to and connect with their team. Follow them on ASN Slow MC on Instagram and Facebook, or their website at www.asn.org, or call 805-781-3660 if you have any questions or would like to volunteer for the AIDS Life Cycle. We hope you'll join Central Coast Voices for our next show on Thursday, June 9th at 1 p.m. with host Lata Merkley as she speaks with guests from Planned Parenthood, Luz Reyes Martin, VP of Community Engagement, and Kira Solis, Community Organizer. They'll discuss the work of Planned Parenthood in the community and how they use storytelling as a powerful tool to decrease stigma and center lived experiences in the movement of reproductive freedom. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX. I'm your host, Mario Espinosa-Kulik, and thank you for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, Mario. This is Public Radio KCBX. Local support is provided by SLOW Food Co-op, a community-owned market where anyone can shop. Open from 8 to 8 daily, the co-op is home to local produce, artisanal goods, and wellness items. Learn more at slowfood.coop. That's slowfood.coop.